Part 17, Chapter 5. Johnny lay behind a tree trunk, saturated with rain, perspiring from the heat, looking at the compound through infrared glasses that did not do much good. For 3 soaking wet days, they had been following a power line, the only sign of civilization. They had landed at the power dam well enough. It was automatic and self-maintaining, and cyclo machinery had been superimposed upon the ancient man works. They had no actual clue as to the position of the mine site beyond its existence, but Johnny knew this power line, huge cables on metal pylons, themselves ancient, would take them to it eventually. And eventually seemed to be the right word. Usually power lines had trees and brush cleared out, but not this one. There, for countless years, the power line provided no more open sky than any other part of this vast forest. The old man maps said this had been a country called Haute Zaire, and that this portion of the extinct nation was the Ituri Forest. Here, the equatorial sun never reached the ground. It was umbrellaed first by cloud cover, and then by the crowns of mighty trees that locked together in a canopy 100 feet above the ground. Great vines, a foot or more in diameter, wrapped like gorged serpents around the trunks. Underfoot, the thick humus squished at every step. And the rain came down. It dripped, it rivuleted down the trunks and vines. It poured through slight openings until one felt he was trying to progress through a constant warm waterfall of varying thickness. It was all twilight. The game blended in deceptively with the gloom, a dangerous fact. They had seen elephants and forest buffalo and gorillas, a giraffe-like animal, an antelope, and 2 kinds of cat were routinely started up by them. The snarl of leopards, the roar of crocodiles, the chatter of monkeys and the screech of peacocks, sounds muted by the rain, made Johnny feel the area was hostile and densely inhabited. The old man maps said there were around 20,000 square miles of this forest, and that even at the height of man's civilization, it had never been completely explored. No wonder a mine site could go overlooked here. The Ituri Forest was no place for buckskin and moccasins and a limp. Trying to progress through it was made difficult by the uselessness of trying to overfly it and the need for some secrecy. They dared not use radios. Dropped lines from planes could foul power cables if they reached them at all. Streams infested with crocodiles made the crossings dangerous. Well, a small party of them were here. Only 20 of their force, scattered out among the trees and ready to call in reserves or the planes if needed. The compound looked deserted, but then cyclos never wandered around in the open. It had been built so long ago that it too was overshadowed by the streaming canopy of trees. What had an employee had to do to be assigned to this dismal, gloomy, saturated outpost, Johnny wondered. He was looking to the left of the compound for signs of truck passageways. There would be no road of tires, but ore truck floating drives would have crushed and killed vegetation. Yes, there was a road over there, headed east through the gloom. Ah, yes, more lights beyond an opening through the trees for the landing of freighters. Did the road go to that? No, another road. One exit road through the forest, and the other to the field.
Never was there a more unplanned raid,
Robert the Fox was muttering. But a well-planned raid took intelligence scouting first. He never could have imagined any terrain like this existed on the planet. Now, Johnny was thinking, what did they really want here? Not dead cyclos, really. He wanted live cyclos. That the cyclos would fight, he had no doubt, and that some would be killed was almost certain. But he was far more interested in live ones than in dead ones. He was reaching to his belt to unfasten the miniature mine radio, to be used first in the hope that they had one on in that compound, when his infrareds strayed over to the right of the compound. There was a defined path, and at its end what appeared to be the wreck of a flatbed truck, ages old and mostly overgrown. Hard to see in this twilight at noonday. The rain made it so hard to pick out details, even with infrared. Johnny gave the glasses to Robert the Fox.
What do you see on that old truck bed?
Robert the Fox squirmed over into a new position, his cloak as wet as a soaking sock.
Something under a tarpaulin. A new tarpaulin. The barrel? Two barrels? The package?
Suddenly Johnny remembered the rambling story of David Fox. The coordinator was back of them, hunkered down, dripping. Johnny crawled back a short distance.
What was that about putting things on a log for barter with the Cyclos?
Oh, yes, yes. They put people there for the Cyclos to see and then withdrew. And the Cyclos would come out and leave some trinkets. You mean the Brigantes, don't you?
I think I'm looking at an incomplete trade,
said Johnny. He hissed to a Scot.
Pass the word for Colonel Yvonne.
Yvonne's English was improving remarkably fast under the interested tutelage of Biddy MacLeod, who thought it a shame for the grand man not to be able to talk a human language. This was giving Colonel Yvonne a thick accent, but nevertheless, he needed the Russian language coordinator less and less. Johnny found they had brought that coordinator, too, leading Sir Robert to wonder whether they might not find an old woman or a couple of cyclos on the plane as well.
Scout way over to the right,
whispered Johnny, amplifying it with a descriptive circle of his left hand.
Watch it.
What's this new maneuver on this unplanned raid?
Said the very wet Robert the Fox.
I don't like losing men. As the English say, it's bad form. Precaution is all.
Are we going to just charge that place?
Asked Robert the Fox.
You can't get plane cover through these trees. I think I see an air-cooled housing for a breathe gas circulator over there. I could hit it from here, I think.
Well, have we got any plane bullets?
Aye, but it surely is a no-plan operation.
They waited in the dismal drip and cascade of the rain. Somewhere off to the left, a leopard snarled, and it set off a wave of bird sounds and monkey chitters. There was an abrupt thud about 20 feet behind them. They snaked back. Yvonne was standing back of a tree. On the ground at his feet lay a strange human. He was out cold. He might have been any nationality, or any color for that matter. He was dressed in monkey skins cut in such a way that they looked oddly like a uniform. A strapped bag had fallen open under him, and a clay pot grenade had rolled out. Yvonne was pointing to an arrow in his canteen. He pulled it out and gave it to Johnny. Over Johnny's shoulder, the coordinator whispered,
Poisoned arrow. See where the glob was on its tip?
Johnny took off Yvonne's canteen and threw it away, making signs it was not to be drunk now. Yvonne detached the man's bow from his belt and offered it. But Johnny was kneeling beside the man and picking up the grenade. It had a fuse sticking out of it. He knew the type of fuse. Cyclo. As soon as he had Johnny's attention again, Yvonne handed him a Cyclo mine radio and pointed at the man.
He watches,
said Yvonne.
He talk.
He pointed at the radio. Abruptly alert, Johnny saw that they might have an enemy in front of them and another one in the forest behind them. He passed orders swiftly through Robert the Fox, who whipped off to get their small force faced both ways. Brigantes! The man at his feet had wide, hide crossbelts, and spare arrows were arranged, points into flaps along the leather. He had an odd pair of crudely made, strapped boots, reminding Johnny of the remains of paratrooper boots he had seen in base storerooms. The man's hair was cut short and stood up. The face was scarred and brutal. The fellow was stirring, recovering from the unexpected clout of a rifle butt. Colonel Ivan promptly put a foot on his neck to prevent his rising. Robert the Fox was back with a nod that dispositions had been made.
They may have been scouting us for days. That's a cyclo radio.
Yes, and bomb fuse. I think there's more here.
A bomb exploded in an orange blast about 50 feet away. An assault rifle hammered out. There followed a period marked only by the startled rush of birds and monkeys through the drip of rain. Johnny got back to the log. Nothing was happening in the compound. Robert put two riflemen in position to cover it.
We're boxed. Nicely planned raid.
Take the rear first. Clean them out back there.
Charge!
Bawled Colonel Ivan. Then something in Russian. There was an instant hammering of assault rifles. Bursting grenades racketed and smoke poured through the rain. Running feet of men covering each other as they went forward in alternate waves. Screams. Russian and Scott battle cries. Then, a lull. Then another furious hammer of assault rifles. Another lull. A voice, hoarse, rising way above the birds and rain.
We surrender!
English? Not French? Hmm? The coordinator looked confused. Some distant running feet as Robert the Fox threw some of his men back of the voice to prevent a trap. Johnny grabbed a blast rifle from a Scot and threw himself down. Pinpoint. No flame. He cut loose with a savage burst at the breathe gas cooler housing. The ancient outside metal peeled away under the repeating impacts like hide. There was a clank and a hiss over there. Johnny gave it another burst. They waited. No cyclos came rushing out. The place must be flooded with air over there, but there was no reaction. The rain came down and the birds and monkeys quieted. Drifting smoke, black powder smoke from the grenades, was harsh to the nose.